Hi, I'm Trevor, and welcome to Catching Up on Cinema. Now, if you aren't familiar with the program, Catching Up on Cinema is a film analysis podcast wherein we introduce each other to films, expand our cinematic horizons, and, in essence, catch up on our cinema. So it is the month of July, 2023, and is once again that very special time of the month wherein we do our very special Catching Up on Blu-ray episode. You may have noticed it's just me on the mic. Today, so this is going to be a solo affair, but if you would like to follow along with the home version of Catching Up on Blu-ray, you can do so by navigating to the lovely website of Blu-ray.com, and then head to the movie/release date section of that website and navigate to the July 2023 calendar. So if you're not familiar with the format of a Catching Up on Blu-ray episode, essentially what we're going to be doing here today is taking a look at the physical media release date calendar. So that would be DVDs, Blu-rays, and 4K discs. And I'm just going to march my way through the calendar, month, and point out any releases that catch my eye for whatever reason, honestly. And also I'll be sure to dog-ear any releases that I might end up seeking out, either for rental or for purchase. So, again, if you're not familiar with how this works, generally physical media releases occur on Tuesdays of each calendar week. So I'll be sure to call out the release dates as I progress through the calendar. And it looks like our first Tuesday release date in the month of July 2023, falls on, funny enough, the 4th of July. You know, kind of a big deal in the U.S. where I reside. And our first major releases are, of course, 4K discs. That is generally how Blu-ray.com arranges their calendar. 4Ks take precedence. And our first big one is The Truman Show on 4K from the year 1998. This is a Paramount disc, and it looks like it got top marks for image fidelity in particular. This is a very solid film. I remember seeing this in the theater because, you know, 1998 was a couple years removed from Jim Carrey being, you know, on top of the world, you know, from his Batman Forever, his Ace Ventura, his Mask, The Mask days in the mid-90s. This is a few years after the fact, but he was still a huge draw in 1998. Especially for, you know, young men such as myself and my brother. This was directed by Peter Weir and also features Ed Harris, and Laura Linney has a very interesting role in this film. I really like the things that she's required to do, in particular the running gag of her having to do ad reads throughout the film. I won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but I really enjoyed The Truman Show back in the day. It's been a long time since I've seen it. It's not a film I have any desire to own, but on a conceptual level and in terms of execution, I do think it was a success. I do think it's a very solid film. And, you know, 5 out of 5 in terms of image quality, that's something worth noting. They don't hand those out like candy on Blu-ray.com. Lovely website, by the way. Not a sponsor of the podcast. Beside that, we have Jaws 2, 45th Anniversary Edition. This, of course, comes to us from Universal, the studio that, of course, produces the Jaws films. And this was, wow, I can't pronounce that name. This was directed by Jeannot Zwark. There is an S and a Z next to each other. I used to know how to pronounce that, but I do not anymore. Roy Scheider and Lorraine Gray, or Gary, excuse me, they both returned for this film. So the saga of Amity and the Brody family continues. If memory serves, all of the Jaws films, all 4 of them, hopefully there is no 5, or a reboot for that matter. It's been a long time since I watched 3, but if memory serves, Dennis Quaid's character in the 3rd one is actually supposed to be one of the Brody sons. I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure they're, like, all of the Jaws films involve the Brodies doing battle with sharks in some capacity. Jaws 2, I've always compared to a, you know, a slasher movie. It came out in 1978, which would probably be, like, parallel to the rise of the slasher film, probably a little early, actually. Like, now that I take that back slightly, because I want to say that maybe slasher movies didn't really get rolling in earnest until maybe a year later, or maybe 1978 on the nose. It's been a minute since I've done my research on that, but structurally, I've always felt that it very much felt like a slasher movie, but at sea. There's something about the fact that most of the cast is teenagers, or at least supposed to be teenagers. Something about the youth-oriented aspect of it made me think of that. The body count in the movie is woefully small. That's always been a complaint for me. It's an okay sequel. It's probably better than 3, that's for sure, but and better than 4, obviously, but it's... There really didn't need to be any Jaws sequels. I mean, Jaws stands alone, but as it stands, it's an okay movie. I mean, the Amity stuff is really what makes it work for me. I do like revisiting that community with Roy Scheider in particular, even though they find every excuse to not include him in a lot of the screen time of the movie. His second banana, if memory serves, he returns as well. I really liked his presence in the film, even if he doesn't do a whole lot. So it coasts on the strength of the appeal of the Amity community, but beyond that, it's like body count's a little too low. It's not like dreadfully dull or anything, but it's an adequate sequel to a legendary film. Beside that, we have Upgrade on 4K from Shout Factory. This is, of course, directed by, was it Lee Whannell? Lee Whannell, I believe is how you pronounce his name. I believe he's an Aussie, often associated with James Wan. I quite enjoyed this movie, but funny enough, we actually canceled an episode of Catching Up on Cinema for this movie. Kyle and I, we both watched it. I was really hyped about it going in. I blind bought it on Blu-ray in 2018. But there was some aspect of it that just left both of us a little bit cold. I can't exactly put my finger on it, but I enjoyed it, but it just didn't have enough for me to latch on to, if that makes sense. So not a bad watch, definitely a really cool idea, solid execution. But in terms of like post-viewing conversation, I just didn't feel compelled to explore it in any capacity, if that makes sense. So I already said my piece about what I think of the movie. I already own it. As I said, I blind bought it on Blu-ray. So I will not be upgrading to the 4K, although it does look like the disc is very, very solid. So if you don't own it, if you're interested in it, I can say it's a fine movie. It's not going to piss you off to put it on your shelf. But yeah, not anything I need to upgrade. It does look like there's a couple of Mission Impossible steelbooks coming out on July 4th. That would be MI3 and 4, Ghost Protocol, that is. We have Fighting Back from 1982. This is an Arrow release directed by Louis Teague and featuring the Pacific Northwest's own Tom Skerritt. If you're not aware, he actually resides on one of the islands neighboring Seattle. He actually did, funny enough, he actually did a YouTube video for our local physical media living museum, Scarecrow Video, here in Seattle. He actually did a YouTube video with them just perusing the aisles of their legendary rental joint. Definitely look up Scarecrow Video, even if you're not from the Seattle area. It's a super cool place. And it was really cool seeing him actually wander the aisles and point out movies that caught his eye and stuff. Very similar to the Criterion Closet series of videos that they do on YouTube, if you're aware of those. Oh, and funny enough, it looks like Yaphet Kotto is actually listed in the cast for this. So a reunion for the two of them in they were both in Alien together. And also it looks like Dino De Laurentiis is one of the producers on that. I know fuck all about this movie, Fighting Back from 1982, but I really like Tom Skerritt and Yaphet Kotto. So I would watch that. Not about to just buy it, but I dig the cover art too. I'll say that much. We have Face Off arriving on Blu-ray. It does appear that this has previously been released on the format. I love this movie, both ironically and earnestly. I adore this movie. It's one of the earliest R-rated movies I saw, and to this day, I am very fond of it. I love the melodrama. I've always loved John Woo in particular. I do think this is a standout among his American filmography. A big reason why I'm singling this out right now is not just because of my personal appreciation for the film, but also because there's something funny going on with this release, and I haven't had time to research this, so I apologize for that. But this is a Paramount release, and I remember this being announced as a 4K, maybe not necessarily from Paramount. So I'm not sure if somebody put the kibosh on that deal on the 4K disc or something, but I remember distinctly that this was scheduled for a 4K disc that I had marked down as something I would definitely buy on day one. But instead, we're getting a reissued Blu-ray. Something happened. I don't know what. I'll have to investigate, though, because this is a movie that I would absolutely love to own in 4K. I own it on DVD. That's the only way I've ever owned this movie, but I would love to upgrade it if they let me. So moving on, we have Come Out Fighting from 2022, and this features a whole lot of people that are selling points maybe to me and a handful of hardcore action fans, hardcore direct-to-video action fans. So this is directed by Stephen Luke and features everyone's favorite Hercules, Kellan Lutz, of Twilight fame, if you're not familiar. Tyrese Gibson, so Tyrese, the singer and the Fast and Furious movie star. Michael Jai White, Black Dynamite himself. Spawn, the OG live-action Spawn, soon to be supplanted by, I believe, Jamie Foxx was fingered for the new Spawn. Dolph Lundgren is also in there as well. So this is a World War II film featuring a lot of, you know, second-tier actors, if we're being honest. But, you know, hey, like, two out of four of these guys are selling points for me. I love Michael Jai White. I've watched a lot of his movies. I own a lot of his movies, and same goes for Dolph Lundgren. Not in a hurry to see it, but, hey, you know, again, I really like half of the people on the poster. And it's a World War II movie. How could it be that bad? I'm going to skip quite a lot of anime titles from July 4th, as we have a policy here at Catching Up on Cinema, being as I am thoroughly out of the Japanese animation game. I really have a poor grasp of what is relevant and what is not when it comes to these titles, so I am very selective about the titles that I spotlight. Basically, I stick to my familiarities, and most of that happens to be older Japanese anime. So there's a lot of titles dropping on July 4th of that subcategory, but just gonna skip over them. Anyway, July 11th, I believe, is actually our first Tuesday of the month, or maybe not. I'm not sure. I don't have the calendar actually in front of me. But it is a major release date in July 2023. So our first major releases from July 11th are After Hours on 4K from the Criterion Collection. And we also have a saying here at Catching Up on Cinema. That would be, if it's part of the Criterion Collection, it is more than likely worth your time. So this is directed by Martin Scorsese. Also probably worth your time, just based on his name alone. And funny enough, this features a Griffin Dunne in the leading role, who I believe is the, I believe he's the friend, not the main character, but the friend from American Werewolf in London. I really liked him in that. I'm not super familiar with his filmography, but he has a very affable, kind of laconic, like, screen presence. Rosanna Arquette is also in there as well, and Tommy Chong, holy shit. And Linda Fiorentino. Always love seeing her and stuff. This is actually not a movie that I know especially well by reputation, but 4K, Martin Scorsese, Criterion, it checks every box that can be checked. Very likely going to make a lot of people happy by being hosted by Criterion and dropping on 4K. We also have Scream 6 on 4K. This is a 2023 theatrical release, I believe, being put out by Paramount. Looks like it got very good marks on 4K, like in terms of image quality. And this, of course, continues the story directly from the events of, I believe it was just simply called Scream, but we all, of course, know it as Scream 5, which introduced Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega as sisters, who would serve as the like the core of the cast among, you know, several other characters as supporting cast members for the current Scream saga, which I haven't seen Scream 6 as of yet. We did review Scream 5, Kyle and I did. I have to assume that there is a scheduled Scream 7, albeit probably a few years out, being as we have a lot of strikes going on in Hollywood right now that are very much freezing everything moving forward. I didn't see this one. I know it got a little bit of a mixed response for a variety of reasons, but I've seen all of these movies. I have seen the first Scream in particular many, many times. I've thoroughly enjoy it. Been a really long time since I've seen any of the sequels, though, if I'm being honest. But it kind of like the Saw movies. Like if they make them, I will come, for lack of a better term. I will show up to avoid the innuendo. I will show up for Scream. I will show up for Saw, including that weird spinoff one that they're going to be dropping in a year or two. Where apparently Jigsaw goes to Mexico, I think is the story. Anyway, I will be watching this. I will not be buying it. I generally don't buy horror movies. That's like, unless it's like a super duper classic for me personally, it's just not really my genre when it comes to collecting. What is my genre, however, is rapidly becoming a tokusatsu. So tokusatsu means, it alludes to special effects photography, like special effects in general, in Japanese cinema. But more commonly, like a more focused description of it is generally, it's like a subgenre of media that largely consists of superhero or superpowered characters with a lot of special effects, a wide variety of special effects. So this encompasses Ultraman, this encompasses Kamen Rider, this encompasses Godzilla, Super Sentai, that is Power Rangers, all manner of men in rubber, men and women, excuse me, wearing heavy rubber monster costumes with lots and lots of pyrotechnics, and these days lots and lots of CGI and stuff. In more recent years, a lot of these titles are finally starting to arrive on U.S. shores in the form of physical media. That would be DVDs and Blu-rays largely. And I love it because I was raised on this shit, like pretty much from the cradle. Like I've been watching Godzilla movies since I was a fucking fetus. And even when I was a very young child, like even pre-Power Rangers, I was that kid who watched Ultraman Towards the Future, the Australian Ultraman that aired in the early 90s. I watched Power Rangers. I watched Kamen Rider. I was raised parallel to like the debut of this subgenre, this subcategory of media in the U.S. I watched like the old 60s Ultraman and Ultra 7 on TNT, like super early in the morning. I watched fucking Ultra 7 super early in the morning. That was from 1967, man. But it's only now that we're starting to see like a deluge of this stuff start to arrive on Blu-ray in our region. And I love it. Anyway, to finally like get things centered on the calendar again, Shin Ultraman, which I saw in the theater with the girlfriend and a friend of mine, from the year 2022, that is arriving on Blu-ray. That is coming to us from Cleopatra, which is not a label that I'm familiar with, but I can vouch for the quality of this film, not so much the quality of this publisher / distributor. I'm not familiar with them, but the film itself is excellent. This is directed by Hideaki Anno, who has directed many live-action tokusatsu movies at this point. Most of them are great. Kamen Rider, I would say, Shin Kamen Rider, that is, which I did review for the podcast, is probably the least of them, if I'm being honest, even though Kamen Rider is arguably my most beloved of all the characters that he has touched in recent years. And Ultraman is probably a close second to Shin Gojira. This is a movie that I'm most certainly going to own on Blu-ray. I'm actually kind of surprised that I don't own it yet. Moving on, though, we have The Watermelon Woman from 1996 coming to us from Criterion Collection. This is a Blu-ray release, and this is directed by Cheryl Dunier. To read the plot description, Cheryl is a video store clerk and aspiring director whose interest in forgotten black actresses leads her to investigate an obscure 1930s performer known as the Watermelon Woman. Excuse me. Sounds great. Sounds interesting. And again, it's part of Criterion Collection. Check it out. Moving on down, we have Human Desire from Kino. We also have Sisu from the year 2022. This is coming to us from Lionsgate. This was the film that, of course, was advertised very cheekily as don't worry, the dog doesn't die. This is, of course, coming to us from Lionsgate, who produce and distribute the John Wick films. So they're thoroughly aware of, you know, the cross-pollination of all that. So this is a World War II era film. I forget what country of it originates from. I believe it's a Scandinavian country, or maybe even a Polish. I think maybe a Polish film. Anyway, involves a dude in World War II and a dog apparently murking a bunch of fucking Nazis. I didn't pay much attention to the marketing for this. I wasn't super interested, but as far as I understand, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, if you're on board with what it presents to you. So that's arriving on Blu-ray. We have McBain dropping on Blu-ray from Synapse Films. Dig that cover art. Not the cover that I remember from the video store on VHS when I was a kid. McBain is a film that I actually did a solo review of for Catching Up on Cinema. So check that out if you're curious what the actual film is. As far as I can tell, it's a fine Blu-ray. I didn't especially like the film, though. We have film noir, The Dark Side of Cinema 15. So this is the 15th noir box set from Kino. My buddy Brad from the CinemaSpeak podcast, apparently he's been dipping his toes into these collections, and so far he's been enjoying his time with them. Not something that I would be willing to take a chance on, but Brad's been having fun with it, so I'm glad to hear that. We have Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, from the year 2023, dropping on Blu-ray. This, I believe, was based on a novel. I remember seeing the marketing campaign for this. It looked like a charming period, like slice of life kind of film. It looked kind of cute. Nothing I'm seriously interested in, but credit to the marketing team. They made it look kind of cute. We have a shout out to a CinemaSpeak podcast friend and frequent co-host Santino. We have a anime title that I will spotlight, One Piece, the motion picture, Red, from the year 2022. I believe Santino has seen this. If he hasn't, he better hustle and get on that. One Piece 1 year. I swear, like, I'm gonna shout that to the heavens every chance I get. I love that phrase, One Piece 1 year. Now, if you're not familiar, Santino committed and succeeded in achieving. He committed to watching all of One Piece, films included, side stories included, in a single calendar year. Do yourself a favor, if you're not aware, look up the episode count and the amount of minutes that Herculean task requires of you in order to achieve. Quite impressive. It requires quite a lot of testicular fortitude, to quote wrestling. I don't have it. Moving on, we have Knights of the Zodiac, aka Saint Seiya. This is a live action Japanese film, I believe. It may actually be an international production. Yeah, it does look like it might be an international production. I assumed it was a Japanese film, but like a Japanese film in that it was backed by Japanese money, but they went to great lengths to make the cast largely non-Japanese actors. Like, there certainly is a lot of Japanese representation in the cast, but there was a earnest attempt to market this outside of Japanese shores. This is a live action adaptation of Saint Seiya, which is the anime and manga from, I believe, the 80s. Killer theme song, Pegasus Fantasy by the band Makeup. Look it up. It will melt your fucking face. Pegasus Fantasy. Again, look it up. So this is called Knights of the Zodiac, and I have heard it is awful, which makes me kind of sad because I mean, this was ill-fated from the beginning. I didn't see this working out. Like, nothing about the aesthetic, nothing in the marketing made it seem particularly appealing, but it did look like a lot of money was thrown at it. But it just not a project that some like should have ever came about, honestly. Like if you're trying to market this outside of Japanese shores, reconsider. This is not the way it's done. But just in case you're interested, Sean Bean is in here. Famke Janssen is in here, everybody's favorite Dutch lady. Mark Dacascos, cousin Mark. It's a running gag between myself and my old cousin, college roommate, excuse me. He referred to Mark Dacascos as cousin Mark because he believed he was somehow tangentially related to Mark Dacascos. Don't ask. Holy shit, Nick Stahl. He's still alive. I didn't know he's actually a trivia question, honestly. Like, what the fuck happened to Nick Stahl? Because he had a brief moment there where it seemed like he was going to be a thing, but who the fuck knows what happened? Well, he ended up in Knights of the Zodiac. That's what, in the year 2023. And, of course, the star of the film. I actually don't know how much screen time he has, but he's marketed as the star of the film. Makenyu, Japanese actor, and I believe they don't market him as such, but he is, I believe, Sonichiba's son. He, in the past few years, what I've seen him in, which isn't much, he served as the chief antagonist in the fourth Rurouni Kenshin film, and he did great. He did very, very well. That film is no better than any of the other Kenshin films, unfortunately, but he did okay with the material. Hopefully he keeps trying. At least, like, if there is a plan for him to break into Western media, hopefully he keeps trying. But apparently this isn't the movie to do it. Let's see. We got Book Club, The Next Chapter from 2023. If you're familiar with the YouTube channel Folding Ideas, he has a video. Dan Olson, I believe, is the creator. He's a Canadian YouTuber. I believe he did a video about why movies like Book Club exist. And it's very interesting from a financial and economic standpoint. But apparently, he got a sequel. We have Party Girl dropping from Fun City Editions. This is from 1995. And I believe collaborators with the show, Michelle and Brian from the Movies for Life podcast. I believe they talked about this a while back. It sounded like a fun watch. We also have Day Zero from 2022. This is coming to us from Well Go. This is a Filipino film starring Brandon Vera, a former UFC fighter, Brandon Vera, I forget the name of the film, but I actually own it. I'm sitting in a dark office right now. I actually can't see much of anything, so I can't look at my shelf right now to inspect like the titles, but he's in a Filipino action film from a few years ago that I actually own. So he's a decent screen fighter, I'll give him that much, but apparently this is like a zombie action film of some sort. He was only a supporting cast member in that film, the one that I can't remember the title of. But this one, it looks like, based on his position on the cover, he's very certain, he's very much the star. Anyway, that's about it for that week. So let's bounce on down to July 18th. Not July 14th. Sorry, we don't get a Con Air reference this month. Maybe next year. We have Hugo on 4K and 3D. This is from 2011. This is also a Martin Scorsese film. I think this is, yeah, it's an Arrow limited edition. So they'll give it the super duper premium treatment. Probably an excellent package for anybody interested in that one. I heard Hugo was excellent, but I unfortunately never watched it. We have To Live and Die in LA from Kino. This is from 1985. And this comes to us from director William Friedkin. Love me some William Friedkin. Starring William Peterson, Manhunter fame, and Willem Dafoe, baby Willem Dafoe, and John Turturro. Okay, could be interesting. Love the title. It's one of those titles that I feel like I've seen a million projects, both like books and film, with that title. So I actually get my wires crossed. I'm not sure exactly which one is which. Hell of a director, hell of a cast. Could be amazing. And it's on 4K. We have also on 4K The Last of Us, the complete first season, excuse me, dropping on 4K and Blu-ray. This comes to us from Warner Brothers. Of course, this was the HBO series adapted from the PlayStation 3 video game, which has since been re-released at least twice. I think it was remastered and then remade for the PS5. I haven't played either the remaster or the remake, but I actually own and played the original PS3 version of it. Loved it. Only beat it once, though, so it's been a long time since I've seen the original version of the story. But this was a really big deal show for everybody, myself included. I thoroughly enjoyed it for the most part. A lot of really interesting creative decisions were made with it that I found myself like ruminating on a lot. I found myself like thinking about it after the fact. Very, very good show. I'll say that much. And also, it was really neat because my girlfriend, the girlfriend, she got even more invested in it than I did. This was like event television for her. She was so swept up in it. I haven't played the second Last of Us game, but I have had the entirety of it spoiled for me. My brother does a podcast called Couch Co-op, which is about video games. It's like a book club for he and his very close friends to talk about video games that they've been playing. They did a lot of hours talking about The Last of Us 2. So I listened to those conversations. I've watched YouTube videos about it. I know The Last of Us 2 very, very intimately without ever having played it. But the girlfriend doesn't. Like, she doesn't have any knowledge of what's to come. So I have thought about playing the game with her, but like with her watching me, basically. But I've since reconsidered, and I'm like, you know, it'd probably be a lot more interesting just to watch her reactions from week to week and like see, like, just to have her experience the story earnestly, like for the first time as the season of television comes out. So this is most certainly going to yield at least two more seasons of television, because The Last of Us 2 is a very, very long game. So I anticipate at least two more seasons, at least. I don't know if I would own this, although I am tempted to, because I can't speak for everybody, but in my household, HBO runs like garbage. And I know it's called Max now. I refuse to call it that because that's a terrible name, but HBO runs like shit. Like either the image quality dips very frequently, or it simply hangs and doesn't work on the TV in particular. Like, on my laptop, it does better. It's more consistent. But on the TV, the girlfriend and I went, like, we were having fucking fits trying to figure out how to watch the show together. Because, like I said, I could run it on the laptop. I was like, why the fuck do I have a big fucking 4K television if I can't use it? So owning this on a disc format would, you know, circumvent all of that. So I'm like, maybe, like, if I am tempted to watch it again. And also, if I'm being honest, like, full disclosure, this might be the last month that I have HBO Max because of said technical issues and because of fucking Zaslav and his flooding the fucking streaming network with reality television bullshit that I don't care anything for. It's going down the toilet fast. So if I want to carry on watching The Last of Us, I think I might actually invest in buying a disc so I don't have to deal with, you know, stuttering and hanging and shitty image quality periodically. Anyway, we also have a Criterion box of the renowned Westerns, five films directed by Bud Bodicher. The Tall T, Decision at Sundown, Buchanan Rides Alone, Ride Lonesome, and Comanche Station. These are all on Blu-ray, ranging from 1957 to 1960. I don't know a goddamn thing about any of those, including the name of the director. Sorry. We also have Breathless on 4K from Jean-Luc Godard from 1960. That is a name that I recognize. Not a name that I'm super familiar with, though, but that is most certainly going to make a lot of people happy, that arriving on 4K. We have Les Miserables from 2012. This is coming to us from Universal, dropping on 4K, 4.5 out of 5 in terms of image fidelity. I gave up on this movie. I think I was watching it with my parents. I was like, it was after like a family dinner or something, and my mom wanted to watch it. This comes to us from director Tom Hooper, who does a lot of musicals without ever having to seeming to have much of an appreciation for musicals, which is a terrible combination. He was also the fellow who did Cats, that fucking disaster, if memory serves. My mom, the person who loves musicals, who asked to watch this movie with the family, she said, like, about 2 hours into this very, very long movie, she was like, no, I'm done. Fuck this. Like, she was just so done with it. So she gave up, and by extension, the whole family gave up on Les Miserables. Bonus points to Russell Crowe and his lovely singing voice, though. To quote Ricky Bobby, you sound like you sound like a big old dog with a lot of peanut butter in its mouth. YouTube Russell Crowe singing in that film. It'll put a smile on your face. It'll brighten your day. We have Kandahar from 2023. This is a Gerard Butler action film. I think the only thing I know about this movie is that it features a sequence where they use like an antiquated cannon to blow up a helicopter, like a modern helicopter. No, wait, excuse me. I got my wires crossed. I think that's actually from the movie Sahara, the Matthew McConaughey movie. Sorry, blew it. Wow, somebody on the internet said something incorrect. You better blow me up on Twitter or something. Anyway, moving on, we have The Iron Prefect from 1977. This comes to us from Radiance Films. They have a very distinct layout to their cover art, which is how I'm able to pinpoint that. Kind of dig the cover art for it. Don't know a damn thing about it, but Radiance is one of those publishers that I don't know a damn thing about, but I'm very, very curious because they're, at least in my region, in the U.S., they are somewhat like a new arrival, and it's always exciting when there's a new kid on the block. We have Number One with a Bullet featuring Robert Carradine and Billy Dee Williams from 1987. Love me some Billy Dee. We have 52 Pickup, featuring Roy Scheider and Anne Margaret from 1986. Love Roy Scheider. We have Fool's Paradise from 2023. This is from Lionsgate. This, I believe, is directed by Charlie Day, also written by him. And if memory serves, this is the film that features him and a cast of who's who's in a farcical film wherein he fails upward and doesn't speak in the entirety of the film. Like, that's kind of the gimmick, is that he somehow manages to fail upward without ever having a single line of dialogue in the film. So he's kind of like the Charlie Chaplin, like the tramp kind of character, essentially. We have... I'm actually going to skip on down because we don't have much of anything that interests me, like, personally listed here. So I'm actually going to skip down to the next week here, and it looks like we have July 25th. So we have One False Move arriving on 4K. This is brought to us by Criterion from the year 1992. And this comes to us from director Carl Franklin, co-written, by Billy Bob Thornton, also featuring him in an acting capacity, starring Bill Paxton, Cinda Williams, Billy Bob Thornton, the aforementioned Billy Bob, Michael Beach, and that's about it. The plot summary is as succinct as it gets. A small town police chief awaits the arrival of a gang of killers. That sounds kind of like High Noon or something. Not super familiar with this one, but I love me some Bill Paxton. And Billy Bob Thornton, like, I don't know, like, about his personal life and whatnot, but very talented man in a lot of capacities, especially in this era, like in the 90s. Like, he was doing some pretty cool stuff, so there's most certainly a reason why Criterion is choosing to release this film in particular on 4K. So that's one to watch. We also have The Boogeyman from Vinegar Syndrome, dropping on 4K. This is from the year 1980. And features John Carradine. Not Robert Carradine. John Carradine. Not familiar with this one, but Vinegar Syndrome is one of those brands that's like, if I'm the person telling you about these Vinegar Syndrome releases, that means you're probably not a Vinegar Syndrome fan, because Vinegar Syndrome has a very distinct brand. They have a very devoted audience. It's a very niche audience, but it's a very fervent one. So yeah, more than likely you already know about all the things I'll be mentioning here, which is why I feel, you know, perfectly comfortable skipping over some of them, honestly. But one that I won't be skipping over is Undefeatable, from Vinegar Syndrome, obviously, from the year 1993. And this is actually dropping on 4K, and I don't know about, like, the inner workings of Vinegar Syndrome, but I do own a few of their titles, and most importantly, I have their New York Ninja movie on, I don't know if it's Blu-ray or 4K, but I got, like, the super-duper special edition of that one. Lovely package. But if you're not familiar with that one, basically, the gimmick is it was a found film where they somehow came into possession of the footage shot for a New York Ninja movie. However, there was no audio, and it was all, as far as I understand, just raw footage. So Vinegar Syndrome as a studio, which they actually make movies now, I believe. I think they produced at least two actual films of their own. They took it upon themselves to actually assemble the footage into a real theatrical film, like an actual feature-length film. Like, so they made sense of all the raw footage. But then, because there was no audio, they had to dub all of it themselves. And they actually recruited some second-tier, like, you know, in certain circles regarded as second-tier, but like in action movie circles, god tier level talent, Cynthia Rothrock and Don the Dragon Wilson. I believe they were both recruited as vocal talent for the film, like serving as voice actors for the film. And around that time, I started to notice, like, they were starting to put out a lot of titles featuring both of those actors, that actor and that actress. So it seems like they have formed like a kinship with Cynthia Rothrock and with Don Wilson. So Undefeatable is a movie that features Cynthia Rothrock, and it is a movie that existed prior to its debut on 4K via Vinegar Syndrome on the internet as a meme, because there's a YouTube video called, like, The Best Fight Scene Ever, which is just the finale of this movie, the climax of this movie. And all of the shirtless grunting that entails. So I have seen the end of this movie many times. My friends and I in my post college years, we were kind of obsessed with that clip. In fact, we nicknamed one of my friends Stingray after the villain in this film because we watched that clip so many fucking times. So I actually will probably buy this. I will likely purchase this film just so I can actually see the rest of the movie attached to the meme. I'm actually kind of surprised that I don't own Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 for the same reasons. If you're not familiar with the Garbage Day meme, that's where that clip comes from. Anyway, Undefeatable on 4K from Vinegar Syndrome. I actually might end up buying that. We have Night Screams on 4K, also arriving from Vinegar Syndrome. Dig the cover art, although it's a little busy. Like, there's a hand coming out of a grill with an eyeball in it? Okay. We have My Best Friend is a Vampire from 1987. This is coming to us from the Vestron video collection, which all but guarantees that my good buddy Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast is going to end up getting this, being as far as I understand, he gets all of the Vestron movies. That's kind of an ongoing project for him, collecting all the Vestron releases. We have World War Z arriving on 4K. That movie was... I heard the novel was excellent. My brother really liked it. He recommended it to me. I still haven't read it, though, because I'm that kind of guy. You can throw recommendations at me for years, and I probably won't ever follow through with them. Yeah, the movie was kind of okay. Needful Things is arriving on 4K from the year 1993. I believe this was actually... I don't know if this was a theatrical film or not. I thought it was a TV film, but this is adapted from a Stephen King series. I think it's a series of short stories. I could be wrong on that. But again, Michelle and Brian from the Movies for Life podcast are probably super excited about this one. This is one that I've heard quite a lot about. Never taken it upon myself to watch it. But it has a reputation, and hell, if you look at the cast, Max von Sydow, Ed Harris, Bonnie Bedelia, Mrs. McLean, pretty solid cast. And also it's a Stephen King adaptation. So there's a cozy factor that comes with a lot of those, especially from this era. So I don't know if this would work for everybody, but I have a feeling I could put this on and it would be like reuniting with an old friend or something. We have Villages of the Damned, Three Horrors from Spain, which includes The Forest of the Wolf, Beatriz, The Sky is Falling, El Bosque del Lobo, wow, that's like the same titles again. I'm sorry, it's three films, they're Spanish, from Vinegar Syndrome. I will say this much, funny enough, I believe it's actually a Spanish production as well. The cover art, the very painterly cover art for this collection, reminds me very much of the video game Blasphemous, which is like a Metroidvania kind of game, if you're familiar with the genre, which is also a Spanish game. I think it's made by a Spanish developer. The art and the font make me think quite a lot of that. So that's interesting, that connection there. We have So I Married an Axe Murder from the year 1993. This is the 30th anniversary edition. This is coming to us on 4K from Sony Pictures, and it gets a 5 out of 5 for image quality. Talk about things I never would have expected to get a fucking 4K. The Mike Myers comedy. I remember seeing that on TV when I was very young. Only the one time, though. So aside from his beat poetry moment where he's talking about women, I think that's the only bit of that movie I actually remember. We have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, not the one you think I'm talking about, though. So this is from Paramount Pictures. This is the 2014 film directed by Jonathan Liebsman, but more commonly regarded as the quote Michael Bay Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film. That would be because it's a Platinum Dunes production, if memory serves, so Michael Bay paid for it, basically. He did not direct it. It doesn't really matter, though, because it's a movie. It's not great. The characterization of the turtles is kind of annoying to me, honestly. Some of the visuals are okay. Like, some of the mocap technology is kind of neat in it. Some of the action design is, again, kind of okay. Not a huge fan of what they did with Shredder. It seemed like somebody hit the panic button and they were like, William Fichtner's the bad guy. It's like, but I guess not, because like maybe they didn't have confidence in William Fichtner carrying the film as the chief villain of it, so they just had some guy in a mech suit as, quote, the Shredder in it. whatever. I think Brian T shows up in the second one. This movie did get a sequel as like a proper Shredder, but he's thoroughly sidelined by all the noise of Bebop and Rocksteady in that movie, as well as that the Arrow guy as Casey Jones. Very messy films, both of them. Not anything that I have much appreciation for, but hey, it was a thing that happened, and we have a brand new animated film coming out very shortly. Looks like it's probably guaranteed to be better than either of those films, so hey, we're moving in the right direction. Cool. Moving on. We have War of the Worlds dropping on 4K from 1953. This comes to us from Paramount. This is a 70th anniversary edition. I believe this also received a Criterion Blu-ray, which I think Kyle, my regular co-host on the program, I believe he actually blind bought this. And we did talk about this for the podcast. Great film. Saw it when I was pretty young. The sound design in it lives rent-free in my head forever, as it does for, I think, everybody. But yeah, this is a 4K coming to us, not from Criterion. So if you want to lean towards image quality over extras, I assume this would be the route you would take for this particular film. We have Blood Money, four classic westerns. This is an Arrow box set. Looks like a very, very handsome package. Unfortunately, I'm not super familiar with any of these. Westerns are a weak point for me when it comes to film appreciation. I just don't have as much of a familiarity with the genre. We have something stupid that I'm going to pay a lot of money for. Resident Evil : Death Island from 2023. I believe this dropped on 4K Steelbook and Blu-ray on this date. As far as I checked, the Steelbook is sold out in a lot of places and is starting to creep up in price above its initial offering of $30, so maybe it wasn't produced in large quantities is my guess. I actually would like to own a 4K of this. The Steelbook isn't a selling point for me, but $29 is a little more than I'm willing to pay. So I didn't buy this one on day one, but now I'm kind of regretting it, being as I'm starting to see it places for $40 and not available in a lot of places. So hopefully they make another pressing of this or something, because it looks like maybe they underproduced it or something. But anyway, this is the new Resident Evil franchise CGI animated films. All of these are ridiculous, but I am a huge sucker for performance capture technology, and these films make liberal use of it, and use it to render actions that you don't see all the time, which is something I'm very attracted to. Like, you very seldom see feature length film, like action films, using this technology. A lot of times you see it, you know, in fits and spurts to render a single character in a live action film or something along those lines. Whereas these are like full blown action films making liberal use of performance capture technology. And I'm a huge mark for Resident Evil. Like, I've been 100% on board with the franchise since literally day one. Like, my brother got the game and I fell instantly in love with it. I own all of these movies. Almost none of them are good, but I will continue to own all of them. So I'm actually kind of invested in this. Also, it's kind of cool that they're finally, I think this is the first one that actually introduces Jill Valentine into the cast. Kind of amazing that it took this long, being as she's one of the single most popular characters in the franchise, as far as I can tell. So that's one that I would like to get, although I'm not willing to pay $40 for it, being as I have to assume it's not any good. Again, almost none of them are. We also have Justice League : War World on 4K. This is, of course, coming to us from DC Warner Brothers. This is, I assume, a animated film, but I'm not sure if it's CGI or hand-drawn animation. A lot of things are starting to lean towards CGI, but I'm pretty sure DC Warner Brothers is still doing things somewhat like traditional 2D animation. We have The Demon Rat from 1992. This is a Vinegar Syndrome release. We have Spacked Out from the year 2000. This comes to us from Kanye. Not a film I'm familiar with, but it's from the year 2000. It's called Spacked Out, and it comes to us from the very small publisher Kanye, which is kind of cute. We have Magic Cop from the year 1990. This is from 88 Films. Very exciting, kind of new kid on the block, at least in my region. They're from the UK, I believe. This is I believe a Hong Kong action film. May have some Wuja stuff going on in there. I don't actually know. I'm not super familiar with Magic Cop's reputation. But let's keep on moving here. In fact, we have Hollywood Nights, Hollywood Dreams and Nightmares, the Robert Englund story from the year 2022. This comes from Cinedigm. I would actually get that. Like, I would actually own that, because I find Robert Englund to be a very affable interview. I like seeing him in interviews. He seems like a cool guy. Talented actor, if you ask me. Like, I've often been impressed with his abilities. So that's actually something I might get. It appears to be a documentary about, or a retrospective maybe, about his career. We have, an anime title that I can say a little something about. We have Iria, Zeiram, the animation from 1994. This is a very short OVA series that would be original video animation series from the mid-90s. This comes to us from the creative mind of Keita Amemiya, who is a Japanese like designer and director who largely works in tokusatsu, so like live-action sci-fi fantasy in Japan. But to be honest, if you look at his design work, his aesthetic tendencies, it always seems like maybe animation is what he should have been doing, but he very steadfastly largely adheres to live action, which I love. To me, that I think that's really cool. I have said many times, countless times on this podcast, that I would love to do a month devoted to spotlighting Keita Amemiya. Maybe just like some of his live action films or something, because even though his abilities as a director, I don't know if he's amazingly competent or anything, but his design work is brilliant. I love his designs. I really do. I own a couple of his art books, honestly. I spent a lot of money on them. this is a animated prequel to a very early live-action film that he made called Zeiram, which also has a sequel that kind of ties into this a little bit, features some characters. There's some crossover with the cast of this OVA series and the sequel Zeiram 2. The character of Iria is very, very popular, or was very, very popular in the mid-90s. She was like one of those kind of like mascots, I guess, that you would see being utilized by a lot of American distributors of Japanese animation around this time. Like, you would see her like on posters, like completely having nothing to do with the product that they're advertising, but you know, she's just a cool design. So they would take her, and US Manga Corps made a liberal use of MD Geist to promote just the concept of anime in the West. So Iria also kind of occupied that position as well, kind of just a mascot or ambassador to the world of Japanese animation in the 90s, in the States anyway. I will buy this. I will own this, because I love Keita Amemiya. I love Zeiram, and this is a fine OVA series. I've seen it a couple times, but never in HD. So this will be really cool. I would love to own this. We have Lords of the Deep from 1989. I talked about this with Brad on Tales from the Shelf just the other day. This was the other deep sea adventure film from 1989. If you're not aware, there was a phenomenon that occurred in the year 1989 in the US, wherein a lot of underwater action-adventure movies were produced. The story goes that studios were aware that James Cameron was making The Abyss. And remember, this is post-Terminator, well, I mean, technically post-Piranha 2, The Spawning, But more importantly, post-Terminator, the Terminator, excuse me, and post-Aliens. So James Cameron was riding very high. So studios caught wind that James Cameron, that guy who makes all the money and makes good-ass films, was making a deep-sea action-adventure film. It's like, oh, well, we better ape that. So everybody decided to do that as well. And what we got was Leviathan, Lords of the Deep, Deep Star 6, The Rift, and there's probably a few others as well. But anyway, long story short, Lords of the Deep has always been the one movie that I never saw. All those other movies that I just mentioned, I've seen them a couple times in some cases, Leviathan especially. But Lords of the Deep, the Roger Corman produced Lords of the Deep, was always the one I never saw. I actually went out of my way to watch this one via Tubi, because I noticed it on the Blu-ray release date calendar, and I can confirm, it's shit. Excuse me, I have a train going by, and you probably heard it on the mic for a few minutes there. I apologize. Anyway, Lords of the Deep is boring as sin. It's deeply uninspired and tensionless. There's two Easter eggs that are kind of fun. One, Roger Corman has a cameo in it, and he's great. Roger Corman's great. Big surprise there. Other one is, I believe one of the main characters is like, he's the Arthur character from Army of Darkness. I believe it's the same actor. So, you know, it's not like he's ever going to put asses in seats or anything, but it's like, oh, hey, I recognize him. You know, it's something in a movie that has very little. Anyway, Lords of the Deep. I finally checked it off the list. It's terrible. Straight up. We have Paint from the year 2023. This is, I believe, an allusion to Bob Ross. I don't know if it actually is the Bob Ross story, though. But it's definitely alluding to that, which makes sense, being as in like the 2010s, in the late 2010s, I want to say, there was Bob Ross achieved like meme status. Like there were whole Twitch channels, plural, devoted to 24/7 screenings of old Bob Ross videos because somebody caught wind of the fact that in the same way that ASMR became a thing that people were aware of and sought stimulation from, somebody caught wind of the fact that Bob Ross was like a soothing presence to be exposed to either through like audio or visual means. So a lot of people on the internet sought out his content because apparently, you know, anxiety is a widespread thing. Like I know this, I'm afflicted with it as well. But my theory is that Bob Ross was an anti-anxiety measure that a lot of people took on in the late 2010s. Usually via Twitch, also via YouTube, and just like streaming in general. So there have been a lot of Bob Ross related productions in recent years. I believe even the Creepshow TV show on Shudder, I believe they even did an episode kind of, again, alluding to the man, not actually directly representing the man. Although maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe that character was supposed to be the actual Bob Ross. I do know that there's been some controversy with the management of his estate, so I'm not sure how comfortable all this is, but point is, Bob Ross, you know, even though he's been dead for a while, like, continues to be a thing. And again, I'm not sure if this movie, this Owen Wilson film, actually is supposed to be about the man, or just be about the man directly, or if it's just a story that's analogous to his own and bears a lot of the visual iconography of his own. Anyway, it exists, and it got some critical acclaim as far as I'm aware. Anyway, the rest is all, there's quite a lot, but I'm running out of steam here, and if I'm being honest, a lot of this looks like schlock that I don't have much of anything to say other than, hey, it exists. So I will finish things by saying, the story of Hong Gil-dong is coming out from 1967. I believe that's a Korean animation that speaking directly out of my ass, not doing any research, I think another Canadian YouTuber, Brandon Tenold, may have done a review of this. Not a kind review, by the way. Korean animation from 1967, probably not very good quality. We also have Mad Heidi, which is coming to us from Raven Banner Releasing. I believe it's a Swiss story. I don't know if it's a Swiss production, but I will point out that this was marketed in a similar way to Sisu, and also features Casper Van Dien in the cast as the President of the United States, I believe. So that's charming. Don't know a whole lot about it, but I think I caught a trailer here and there. Looks cute. Not anything I would pay money for, but looks cute. And the last one I'll point out is Gangs of London Season 2, which oddly enough has a listing on Blu-ray.com, but in my region anyway, does not actually have a Blu-ray release. All signs to, I've done some research on this, and I have not been able to track down a Blu-ray release for this, this disc series. As far as I understand, it's only coming to U.S. shores via DVD, which is a bummer, because I will buy this. I will watch this. I was thoroughly invested in that first season, even though I will be the first to admit it's not great, but it has some truly incredible sequences. Unfortunately, the momentum just falls apart. The story falls apart, if I'm being honest. The cast falls apart, if I'm being honest. Unfortunately, it's one of those kill everybody kind of stories where it's like, I think you killed a few too many characters because I'm not sure who to give a shit about anymore. But the ride, I thought, was pretty much worth it. I don't know the reputation of this second season, but I'm invested. I think, I always forget this guy's name. Gareth Evans. See, I get Garrett Edwards and Gareth Evans mixed up all the time. Anyway, Gareth Evans. I think he returns for at least one episode of this. Still looking forward to Havoc, I think is the name of the film. It's his Tom Hardy production. It's been in the works for years at this point. I'm still waiting for that, but that man has done some truly incredible things. Gareth Evans, that is. Those Raid films, great stuff. Gangs of London Season 1, his contributions to it were great. I'm invested. I'm on board. I will buy this. It's just a shame that I have to buy it on DVD. Anyway, that is it for the releases of July 2023. So as is customary, I will proceed backwards through the calendar here and just call out the titles that I think I'm actually going to add to my collection. So I did say Gangs of London Season 2. I'll be buying that on DVD. So Brad is probably going to be upset about that, but you know, shit happens when that's the only way you can get it. Iria, Zeram, the animation, I will be getting that on Blu-ray. Resident Evil Death Island, if I can get that on 4K for a reasonable price, or somewhat reasonable price, I will do that. I own all these films. I'm not about to stop owning all these films. Hollywood Dreams and Nights, the Robert Englund documentary. I actually am considering that. That's not 100% guaranteed, but that's a big maybe. Undefeatable on 4K from Vinegar Syndrome. Yeah, I think it's time I find out the actual front-to-back story of the character of Stingray, the classic cinematic villain that is Stingray. The Last of Us, if I feel compelled. It's a big if, but if I feel compelled to rewatch that first season, in anticipation of the inevitable second one and probably third one, I might actually get this on a disc format so I don't have to contend with trying to stream the damn thing, because I'm telling you, HBO doesn't work in my house. I don't know what it is, but it's the only streaming service that myself and the girlfriend have that just refuses to work. It refuses to be stable, even when we turn off the 4K functionality. That says a lot. Shin Ultraman, definitely getting that. Oh, by the way, The Burning is also coming out on 4K. That's a Scream Factory release that I'm sure is going to be a really big deal, probably from my buddy Brad. He loves horror movies. Face Off, still waiting for that 4K. This is only a Blu-ray. I was promised a 4K, I think by Kino or something, but it seems like that got delayed, so I'm going to hold off until I hear otherwise. But yeah, that's about it. So thank you for joining me today as I worked my way through the Blu-ray calendar here. Hopefully it was fun for you. It was definitely fun for me. But if you'd like to catch up on any of our other Catching Up on Cinema content, you can find all of that collected on our website at catchinguponcinema.com. You can also find us on the social medias in the form of it's Twitter. I know it's X these days, but it's fucking Twitter. You can find us on the Twitter at Catching Cinema. You can also find us on the Instagram at Catching Up on Cinema, so feel free to hit me up at either of those. The podcast is also available on pretty much every platform you can imagine, including Bitcade, so fucking Google it. And that being said, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.